Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news. And now, a word from our sponsor, AgoraPulse. We know how hard it is to juggle all the things in your business. Accounts, meetings, the never-ending inbox. That's why we've teamed up with AgoraPulse to give you more than 5 hours back a week when it comes to managing your social media marketing. No complicated Excel docs, long emails, or millions of open tabs. Simply manage all your social media channels in one place. Go to www.agorapulse.com/irishtechnews. To get 1 month free. Now all you have to do is figure out how you want to spend those spare 5 hours.
Hi, today on the Irish Tech News Podcast, we have someone in our theme of people who are looking at the future and doing interesting things. And he's also someone that has spoken Dublin several times in the past. So it's been good to see him live. And then also it made sense to catch up with him. So first of all, who do we have the pleasure of talking to today?
Hi Simon, it's Dean Johnson. And yes, as you rightly said, I have had the pleasure of speaking in Dublin. It's always nice to speak to an audience that actually listens to what you're saying as well. So that's always a bonus.
So first of all, for those who don't know who you are and what you do, how would you explain that, as you can do that better than I can?
Okay, well, these days I am someone that combines lots of different things from my background. So I describe myself as a design, technology and innovation consultant, and I pretty much do each of those three things in equal measures for a variety of clients, from technology, the huge conglomerates, global concerns, right the way down to the tiniest of startups, and everything in between as far as what they produce them for. So it could be for entertainment, brands, through to the large and small of the automotive world as well, because that's we didn't used to talk about small, but now almost anybody is getting into the mobility game. So lots across that. The design side of things, my background as a designer comes into that. The technology has always followed that along. So it's always gone hand in hand. And then the innovation side of things has been about the boundaries that I've always pushed and continue to push, either with or for clients, to make sure that they're keeping themselves on their toes, but also they're delivering things to consumers that maybe they're not necessarily expecting, which is always a fun thing to do for the future.
Yeah, and both exciting and challenging. So there's a few areas there. And so I guess I'm going to start with the first one. Is that the first time we came across you was at the what was the annual Dublin AR/VR conference, and I would enjoy them. I thought they were great, but then after a few years, I would feel that each year I had left the previous year excited about how it was all about to happen, and then by the next year I felt it was Groundhog Day. So if we factor in that some of the VR AR ideas that we were listening to 3 to 5 years ago, has it been slower than we thought for that to be rolled out, or am I missing how it's progressed?
It's funny, isn't it? So the second VR, I mean, AR is interesting because AR has been around for a long time anyway, but it's actually been around and available for decades now, because I don't know if you remember when there was a big thing about like printed magazines where you'd point your webcam at them and Robert Downey Jr. or someone similar would pop out the front cover of Esquire magazine. That was essentially doing the same thing that everyone was excited about, Magic Leap and the huge strides in headset technology. It's the same thing, but on your head. So that hasn't changed in almost any shape and form, because it's still not really any useful aspect at people's grasp. And then VR is different again, because VR, you think about VR and it seems like a fairly recent thing if you're a consumer, because there's been more success with Facebook having bought Oculus, and the fact that they've finally started to sell, quite literally in their millions of headsets. But there's a huge gap. So when VR re-emerged about seven or eight years ago, and we were talking about Oculus again, so we're talking about it now, but we were talking about Oculus then as a Kickstarter project that first came into our knowledge, and it was a chance to put a headset on people's faces and deliver a 3D immersive experience. And that held all sorts of potential for designers and technologists, because we could, as arm wavers, go out there and talk to everybody and wave our arms around and quite literally say the sky's the limit. You know, these virtual environments can deliver almost anything. Now, I spent probably a good year or so on the circuit, as we would talk about the speaking circuit even, talking to everybody about the potential. Then I pretty much stopped talking, because there was a whole bunch of people that were facing inwards, and they were all talking to each other about how amazing it is rather than how amazing it actually was. Because without people's faces and without consumers particularly to put money into a project, it was kind of dead in the water. There wasn't anywhere for it to go. The thing that did pick up was on the enterprise side. So it was adopted widely within engineering, within training, and that continues to grow and flourish, because the difference there was something was produced that was, it was an essential tool. So right now, if you're a consumer, unless you're one of those particularly dedicated to putting a VR headset on and playing Star Wars environments, if it was taken away, you probably wouldn't notice. Now, that's not something you can say about some pieces of technology in your life, like a mobile phone, for example. Most of us feel like we've had our arm cut off as soon as our mobile is just left on the sofa. And if you may one day have gone out without your phone in your pocket, which is, it doesn't happen very often at all, because it's almost kind of muscle memory, as the fact that you pick the thing up and it's there with you. But if you forgot to take your VR headset out with you, you would get back at the end of the day and not really realize that it wasn't with you. So that was something that I didn't make myself popular by telling the VR community that they needed to stop facing inwards and turn around and tell the people on the outside why they needed VR in their lives, why they needed AR in their lives, and what it was actually doing to add some kind of value. So as to your point, Simon, you turn up to the conferences and they seem to be pretty much the same. That was because you turn up to the conferences and they were pretty much the same. So including the message, which would be, this is the year. This is the year of VR / AR / MR / XR. So I even got to the point where I spent 48 hours in VR to demonstrate what could be achieved by adding value. So that value was about physical experiences within a virtual environment. So we think of a lot of this as being digital. Well, of course it is. It's a digital platform. The content within the headset has to be digital. But how do you then enhance that to trick the brain into thoroughly believing and letting go and thinking not just this is a great VR experience, but I'm here. So that 48 hours involved strapping myself to the top wing of a biplane while I was quite literally being flown around in the sky with a VR headset on. I got my first tattoo to see if wearing a VR headset could mitigate pain. It did, not enough, but it did. And driving go-karts within VR, again, all of these things were fun. They were interesting, and actually they were scientifically relevant. But the most interesting thing to me when I came back out the other side was I appreciated reality so much more. Rather than thinking, oh, I want more VR, I thought, actually, I want more R. And that's something that's become evident in our 12 months plus of global pandemic and lockdown and working from home, is that I really miss real people in the real world. As many, you can have as many Zoom calls as you like. It's still not the same. It's not digital, either replacing or enhancing what it used to be like to be in a meeting. It might cut a few short, which is a good thing some of the time. But what hasn't happened there is that VR or AR have taken up the slack and made us all go, hang on a minute, I wish I could do this in VR. Because even those that are saying that, ask them to answer that truthfully after an hour long, or the equivalent of an hour long Zoom, coming out of an hour in VR, how they feel is relieved, not excited. They think, oh my God, I'm glad I'm not in that meeting anymore. And that's not the lasting impression you want at the end of a meeting, is I'm glad I'm no longer in it. So if it's enhancing it by allowing a group of people to share something that's in 3D in the middle of them, and they're walking around it and they're doing all of those things, then that's adding some value. But make that a 15-minute meeting and then come out. And if you have to continue it in Zoom or wherever you're doing that, make sure each of these digital platforms actually enhance each other, work with each other in harmony, rather than the, as is all too often the phrase, to say this is the future of, rather than this is a future that works hand in hand with a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah. And so that's in relation to AR, VR, right? But can we draw from that in terms of the wider conversations you have with people about a variety of technologies, that you almost also have to manage expectations and get them to separate between what's exciting and what's relevant? Like, yes, we could have pink unicorns, but we need them or something. So is that part of the process you apply in your conversations when you talk about future trends in general with people?
Yes, it is. I mean, the key thing there is to not forget about the human. So you have these are all the things, you know, as you just mentioned there, that can be answered by essentially the bottom line, and the minimum viable product is you have to have something that works. So whether that's physical and it has to not fall apart, or whether that's digital and it needs to provide a level of service and consistency and a user experience that is something that people expect and understand quickly enough, that doesn't kind of throw them off kilter. But also it's a case of the human being involved is going, right, well, we take this up a level. So, you know, we've gone that minimum viable product, it's got to work. Then actually the human being involved is, you should have asked this before, but if you've got to the stage of having that product, you know, why have we got that product? What is it doing and where is it placing itself in somebody else's life? But also, where is it adding value? Now, you said about the pink unicorns just now. Sometimes that value is actually devalued. So the pink unicorn could be that it is providing us a release. It's providing us entertainment. Now, entertainment can be looked at more often than not as being something that is throwaway, that it's not an essential. You know, I think we've spent 12 months consuming Netflix and the internet. So people definitely are hungry for things that inform them, but not just inform them in a entertaining and a digestible way. So when I talk about the human being key to this, it's probably best illustrated when we used to use the acronym BYOD and bring your own device. So it would be a case of, oh, I've got my work phone and I've got my own personal phone. Actually, most people now have a phone. And that's because finally people realized way too late that we are one person that interacts with things in one way, because we are a consumer. We are a user of and digester of technology in a certain way. You don't digest your business or access to your business content in a different way that you do as a consumer. So the pink unicorns, more often than not, are actually there as a great way to lead people into content and lead people into an experience and lead people into a way of digesting the message and the content and the information that we want to and need to either in our day-to-day lives or in our work lives, which, you know, again, the lines are blurred with various working from home and lockdowns and things that are going on right now. But they are consumed by the same person at the other end. It's not someone that suddenly switches into a work person or a home person. It's very much about considering that human.
Mm-hmm. And like you say, I mean, this is the thing that editorially for us that we try to encourage people to understand is that if you want people to engage with the things that you create, you have to apply the same degree of interestingness, provoking curiosity and quality in their business headset as everywhere else, because they have to think about what do you do the rest of your time and what do you expect from the things you interact with. And if you don't deliver the same levels in a business context, like you say, it's us as people, not us, it's not business then us, so the business things have to be made relevant to us, otherwise we won't value them in the way that we've seen better elsewhere. So that makes sense. What are you excited about in terms of innovation developments in mobility? Because obviously there was a famous quote about, you know, 40 years ago, we thought we'd have flying cars and instead we got Facebook. So tell us what is coming. Because, I mean, again, I like the idea of the Hyperloop, for example. Is this something that's part of the portfolio of developments in mobility? Or what are are they accurate and what can we expect?
Yeah, Hyperloop's fascinating, actually, because it's one of those things that quite literally goes under the surface of everything else. So the things that we focus on, so mobility, for example, you'll think of the obvious ones, from cars to planes to boats. It's funny how the last 12 months, planes and boats don't exist anymore in most people's lives, because no one in their right mind is booking up currently to go on a cruise. Next to nobody flies anywhere, but cars are still everywhere. They're still a huge part of our lives. But what you say, Hyperloop, quite literally goes right underneath all of that lot, and is fascinating because it's something that will connect in the way that we normally think about mobility as the focus is on the journey, rather than the simple fact that if we think in terms of Star Trek and a teleporter and beaming us from where we started to where we finished, actually most of the time that's the only really important thing. So that either the commute or the journey to the shops, that's not really there for your driving pleasure or to see the sights. It's just very, very mundane. So Hyperloop, you know, you quite literally go under the ground, hop on one end, hop out the other as quickly as is humanly possible. That is actually very much focused on the fact that you have been transported to somewhere else rather than the experience of the transportation. That then leads on quite nicely to the fact that we're, as an industry, exploring autonomous vehicles and the fact that in the future those cars will all be equipped with the ability to drive us rather than for us to drive them. So that then becomes a case of what happens in the journey rather than, as I've just talked about, something like Hyperloop. So what do you do as the human that is in the vehicle taking you from point A to point B? So do you gaze out the window? You know, you can do. So if it's somewhere that is particularly interesting, it then becomes all about what's going on outside and where you are. Do you overlay information on all of that sort of lot so you can understand as much as you want on either the things of interest, or if it's from a sales and marketing and advertising perspective, is it something that you'll wish to save the information about the thing that you've just gone past for later, or buy something because it's attracted your attention as you're going past? Or do you dedicate that to a working environment? Is it something that either extends your workday so you get more done? And some people want to avoid that. Or is it something that shifts your workday? So that whereas it used to be that your workday didn't start if in the weird world where people still do work 9 to 5, if you were getting to the office at 9 but you were driving yourself for an hour or 30 minutes to get there, you couldn't start your workday unless you were just on the phone. But your workday may well start at 8 or 8:30. And then that time in the office, however that takes shape, can shift rather than simply extend. So you're still having the same quality of life rather than extending your business hours into that. Or is it purely entertainment? Is that environment that surrounds you something that delivers movies, delivers games, delivers information? Or do you just sleep? You know, all of those things become about what you do on that journey. So that's a fascinating thing that, from a design and technology and innovation perspective, you have a blank canvas where before that canvas was very, very practical. It needed to perform all of the functions that the interior of a car has always done, from offering you a steering wheel and some pedals, to buttons that would, in its highest level of complexity, operate a sat-nav. And then every other surface was there to be either purely decorative or purely practical, depending on the amount of money you're paying on that, paying for that vehicle. But then suddenly, with the ability to operate in an environment that isn't about you driving it and it is driving you, every surface available within that environment becomes something that can perform another task. It can display things. It can become touch sensitive. It can become something that provides all sorts of visual and tactile delights that we've never been able to do before because we weren't allowed, quite rightly, to be distracted by it. So that environment is fascinating. And then you think about, so on, again, on its lowest common denominator for mobility is things like e-scooters and cycling or electric bikes. Those environments aren't offering us any of the distractions I've just talked about, but they are helping environmentally. They're helping get us out in actual fresh air, which is a novelty for people that are stuck in front of computers or indoors or trapped and certainly in lockdown when you can't necessarily move around. They are offering freedom to the individual, but the other thing they're doing within cities and urban environments is offering the freedom from the congestion that vehicles of all shapes and sizes currently provide. So whether that's congestion during rush hour, or it's just everything the way it's currently laid out to cater to the larger vehicle and the things that it emits and the noise and all of the other kind of things that pollute our environment, suddenly that is turning on its head and it's about the humans rather than the things that they're encased in. So that's fascinating. But from a mobility perspective as well, the things, so we've kind of talked about that autonomous environment, what you do in it, the autonomous vehicle itself suddenly opens up other opportunities for urban congestion, because those vehicles, in theory, when they're aware, will know where the other vehicles are. So they can either avoid them, or they can, when they're in the same street, the same road, the same network as those other vehicles, can actually you know, present themselves in the most effective way of getting from A to B, so that they either will avoid the other ones, or they'll go in procession, or they will allow you to know who and what is around you, and that in itself is fascinating. But that's all technical, and the design challenge. The thing that fascinates me, and I consult and have an ongoing conversation about, is how do you communicate that to your audience? So if, for example, you've only been an automotive brand that has sold cars, that has sold the desirability and the message of driving your own car, or saying this will be the safest vehicle for you should you crash, how do you then talk to an audience that thinks, well, actually, I'm not really going to buy a car in the future. I'm not going to drive it. But hang on a minute, if I'm not going to drive it, it's going to drive me. That sounds really unsafe. How do you have a conversation with that audience that isn't just someone simply saying, as we've always done in advertising terms, this is the best product for you because it does X, Y, and Z, to simply say it's safe doesn't necessarily get the right reaction from an audience because they won't necessarily believe you.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a funny one because overall, you can believe it's credible that AI will probably have far less accidents than humans. But then the trouble is that when Tesla have a couple of accidents, even though statistically that means far fewer than humans manage, the fact that AI has managed to have it then means that the concept of safe is still something that people will not completely be ready to believe, even though statistically they probably are going to be safer. And, you know, the crashes were, you know, edge cases, but obviously we don't want any edge cases. And as you mentioned, right, we have the last year, you know, like planes and boats have become much more marginal to many of our lives. So has the pandemic nudged forward an adoption of future styles of mobility?
Well, it definitely has, in as much as it's freed up those that were congested, for want of a better word, with excess thought on how to get to the next stage. So because we've almost had a reset on the way that we travel, the way that we view the necessity of the things that we do, people have cut back on so much. You know, whereas we used to decide that, right, I'm just going to the shops, or I'm just going to X, Y, or Z, I'll jump in the car and I'll do that. In the same way that we don't buy things because we're not browsing, we're not passing by a high street, or we're not going to a shopping center, we're not even going to an out-of-town shopping center in the same way that we used to. Mm-hmm. We then think, hang on a minute, I don't need to do that. I'll wait till the weekend, or I'll wait till next week, or I'll wait till next month, or I'll just buy it online. So people are changing the ways that they are mobile, which is fascinating as well, because even I've just said, people think differently and they will think about what they will do. People are already moving on and not even thinking about it. They're just naturally not doing it. So that's fascinating. So from I'd say what the pandemic has done is it's hit the reset button, and it's all the people that had to say, well, how do we get people to change their habits? How do we talk to people in a way that is a sort of kind of a transitionary period of taking them from the things they used to do to the things that they will do now? We are already in the position of doing the things that we do now rather than needing to get there. What will be the disruptor of the disruption will potentially be when lockdown is lifted everywhere, and it's not about shopping, it's not about going to work and commuting and doing these things. It's simply the release and the relief of people being able to go somewhere. And what people will do is they'll go to the places that they may not have even thought about before. So for the travel industry, for the entertainment industry, they need to be really pretty hotly on it to say, come here. You may never have gone here before. Have this experience. Do this thing that you've never experienced before. So suddenly we're going to face roads that were pretty clear, or they were used for a different purpose, to people going to experience destinations to do the things that they haven't been able to do for a long time. So habits will have changed. So from a commute to retail, the habit that won't change, as in will go back to, will be that destination. You know, and there will be a lot of call for people's eyeballs on every possible way of attracting people to something that either still exists or now exists, and as an experience that wasn't there before.
Yeah, look, I mean, and you see, in some ways, it's like there's been a global near-death experience, both like metaphorically and literally. And like you say, you know, once lockdown is lifted, the first place you're going to go is not to Tesco's, you know, it's going to be to the place that you always meant to do that you didn't, because now you've had time to reflect on, oh, I'm locked down, what would I like to do? So I think that I think that's a good observation. And I think those that can be thinking through what the implications of that will be well positioned, because it's before that even we're moving towards more of an experience-based economy. You know, like, it wasn't about buying things as much. It was more about skydiving or doing things that are special to you. So for you, with the nature of what you do, what are your sources of information and inspiration, and how do you ensure to challenge or question that you're not in a filter bubble?
So this is interesting for me. I've always loved pretty much every social channel, probably apart from Facebook, and is that it provides me with real human beings. So rather than simply following a bunch of news outlets and the individuals that work for those news outlets, or the brands themselves, by the time you've heard any of that, you're way down the line, because someone spent 2-3 years developing the thing that's appeared. I use social channels to sniff out the people that are creating amazing things within the startup environment. So something that I've found, and certainly found within the speaker circuit, was that the most interesting audience for me was at startup conferences and startup platforms, because you can, as we've already said, you can go to a VR conference, and whether you're in the audience or whether you're a speaker yourself, you are simply talking to a bunch of people that are already doing it, they're still on stage, or a bunch of people in the audience that are either already interested in it or are doing it themselves as well. You go and you talk within a startup environment, and they are at various levels, and those levels are all interesting and useful, because if you're wanting to start up, you've got the most amazing idea in the world, but you haven't got the funding or you haven't got the connections, you're going to be in that audience. If you are an investor and you're at the other extreme and you're running an incubator or you're running a startup fund, you are going to be in that audience, or you're going to be on the stage. Now, those in between are also fascinating, because they may have gone through one round of funding and they're now looking for either more funding or more partners or ways to expand and pivot and move off somewhere else. All of those people, individuals, and conversations are fascinating. And what they all do is they inform me. They certainly inform me, but they inform the future. Because if you're a startup, in its very nature, you are starting up. It hasn't got where it's going yet. And even those that seem fully rounded and fully formed may well inform a brand as to the thing that they should be doing in a year's time, because they can then work with someone to help shape that into the thing that it always could have been. So those kind of environments are the places that I find my most engaging, interesting, fascinating. And we've been talking about mobility today. There's so many within the field of mobility now that are labeled as startups. You've got a company called Arrival that is essentially one of the most successful mobility companies in the world, but they're known to very few people. But they've started up and they're still within their startup cycle, but yet they're making trucks for UPS and Royal Mail and all electrified, and they're creating electric Mustangs as well as one of their spin-offs, and they run and develop RoboRace, about fully autonomous racing vehicles. They are doing all of these things within a startup environment and treating it as such, whereas a lot of the bigger companies they're shackled by their history. They're shackled by the way that they are built and run, and they don't have the freedom to do that. You've got the flying cars are on their way from a race series called Airspeeder. You've got electric scooters, racing series. Again, all of these things are, because of their competitive nature, are giving that momentum to the message and the technology and the development. And that in itself is infectious. You know, it's great for me to talk about because it is so exciting. So, yes, I look for all of these things. I find all of those, every single one of them, they start in some shape or form on a social platform, not that's been handed to me, but I've gone in and I've found the individuals that are responsible for that germ of an idea and excitement.
Yeah, look, I think you're right. I remember when there was drone racing where you wore the headset and you flew the drones based upon what you saw. And like you say, you go to, I mean, in that case, it actually was a Facebook group, but wherever they're active, it's Reddit or wherever, you go to where the action is. And similarly, I remember the race to drive solar powered cars across Australia. And, you know, in the beginning, they didn't get very far and they get better and better. And then, you know, like you say, these edge areas create the competition and the activities that then gradually demonstrate the technology can do a lot more than people maybe thought it was. And then people look to work out how to mainstream it. So, yeah, that makes sense. And it's kind of quite fun, too, as well. I was thinking, as you were talking in that way, similarly, people have been asking us very recently about, you know, non-fungible tokens, because people are looking, you know, from the CryptoKitties a couple of years ago, they're now looking to work out how can artists and musicians monetize what they do in a digital world. So do you think that's a fad, or do you think that's moving into something that we might see more of?
I think it's both. I think there's a lot of money. There's a lot of money to be made out of some awful stuff at the moment. There's going to be a balance because it's obviously got some headlines. It's got focus on it. You know, even with my background as an artist, I sadly haven't had quite the amount of time to put into it and make my millions and on the crest of the wave while it's happening. But it will. What will happen is the cream will float to the surface. There will be a few people that are stung right now by things that won't be worth what they paid for them by any means, because it will turn out that they've spent a lot of money on something that in 12 months' time people will not want to buy for anywhere near the amount that has been paid for it. Therefore, it's not worth what has been paid for it. But during that time, the incredible artistry that will come to the surface, and I think this is one of the benefits of it, and again, as my role as president-elect of the CSD, to champion design in all shapes and forms, is, you know, something I always say, everyone has the ability to be creative, and that doesn't make everyone a designer. You know, everyone can claim to be a designer, but it doesn't make them a good designer, in the same way that everyone can claim to be an artist, but it doesn't make everyone a good artist, or it doesn't, in everyone's eye, offer something that they would think of as art. But what will rise to the surface is some incredible pieces of artwork that people wouldn't necessarily have seen. You know, anything that gives a voice and a platform to someone that wouldn't necessarily have had it has to be a good thing. So I'm all for that. I think what will be lost in it initially at the moment is the crypto pound signs, dollar signs. But it's what is being seen and what will be seen will be some incredible visual pieces of art, which is great. But also that will be an interesting way of applying what is art and what is visually or creatively worth money, because it's not just what we would normally have thought of that. You know, it's the first tweet. It is the designs and plans for a 3D environment. It is a virtual house. These things wouldn't necessarily have been categorized as artwork. But they are now, because of NFT, you know, they're thought of in the same breath and being valuable for their creative, you know, worth. So I that's a good thing. You know, for all of its negativity about, you know, the bad stuff, there will always be awful examples of anything. But I think give it 12 months and the best of the best will rise to the surface.
Yeah, look, I hear you. I mean, and the one that went for 60 odd million, it took him 13 years and was a compilation of images. And then yesterday on Twitter, I saw a composite image of the Milky Way that took 10 years and 1,000 photographic hours to create. And that's not an NFT, but it's the same concept that some of the art that gets created took a long time and a lot of smaller images to put it together. So therefore, in that way, if it's beautiful too, then it will be art. And yeah, you know, but people rush in and buy things, you still got to exercise your diligence and make sure, do you like it, and is it valuable, and are you buying it because it has artistic value rather than just because you think it's an investment. If you do the second, then I think you're taking the risk you deserve to take. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. How can people find out more about you and your work?
Well, across all the social channels, I'm Active Right Brain. So that's active without an E. So ACTIVRIGHT brain, hence the right creative side of my brain. And the same for the website is activerightbrain.com. And you will find me with all my escapades across various whatever we can do in lockdown, using and testing things to within the inch of their life, and talking about it, and actually walking the walk as well as talking the talk.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's something you do, and I think your feed, like in Twitter and other places, is great to follow because you are doing interesting things, and therefore, like you say, for us, we can learn from the kind of things you're doing. So look, thanks for coming on the podcast, Dean.
That's great. Thanks ever so much, Simon.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Agora Pulse. We know how hard it is to juggle all the things in your business. Accounts, meetings, the never-ending inbox. That's why we've teamed up with Agora Pulse to give you more than 5 hours back a week when it comes to managing your social media marketing. No complicated Excel docs, long emails, or millions of open tabs. Simply manage all your social media channels in one place. Go to www.agorapulse.com/IrishTechnique. News to get 1 month free. Now all you have to do is figure out how you want to spend those spare 5 hours. Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/IrishTechNews, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.